Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to depressing episode of Sour Graps. I'm your host, Alex Pulaski, and everything sucks. Everything sucks. Look, my boys, the Milwaukee Bucks, didn't deserve to win that game. They didn't deserve it. Not with that. The first foul they called that sent Middleton to the line for three, that wasn't really a foul. So they shouldn't have been able to tie it. But the foul they called after that, definitely not a foul. So I guess it's only fair. One terrible call after a bad call. But now my boys are down 2-0, and I just think they should forfeit the next two and come home because they really want to be at home. The bubble's been really hard on my boys. They've worked their asses off all year to get home court through the playoffs. And then the COVID thing happens. They don't get to play in front of their fans, the fans who are so excited for this thing. There's no way playing at home. They go down 2-0 and they miss their families and they miss their home. And a city 40 minutes to the south of theirs is burning because of racism. So they just want to come home. And I think they should get to just forfeit the next two games and come home. Let the Celtics beat the Heat in five and move on to the finals, where the Celtics will get swept by the Lakers or the Clippers. There you go. I predicted the rest of the finals for you. This is lemonade. I'm going to drink it as per usual. Lemonade, the official beverage of Sour Graps, because it gives me that sour power. Oh. Was disgusting. I mean, the lemonade was great, but I've got to watch lemonade dribble down my beard. That's not fun. Speaking of not fun, the Bucks are down 2-0. And wrestling is bad. I mean, it's better than it has been for a while, but that doesn't mean it's good. It means it's less bad. And anything that has Kevin Dunn in charge of producing how it looks on TV is very bad. We'll talk about that a little later. So I'm supposed to also talk about what happened at Payback as it pertains to what happens on Raw. And I don't even really remember, man. Like, Lashley beat Apollo Crews to become US champion, which I'm pretty sure I predicted for months now. Ever since Crews got to feud with Lash with MVP and beat him a few times. It's to, like, make Apollo Crews look, presentable, so that when he loses to Lashley inevitably, we're like, oh, well, at least he had a decent run with the title. So that's what happened with that. What else happened? Bayley and Sasha lost the tag straps to Nia and Shayna. Nia and Shayna actually works well as a team. Like, Nia is just this big, dumb, moving mountain. And Shayna Baszler, who's like a surgeon, just ripping people's limbs off. Do surgeons rip people's limbs off? I mean, I guess it's called like an amputation. But she's definitely more surgical than Nia. I think a chainsaw is more surgical than Naya, but you get my meaning. Naya didn't figure into the finish of that at all. I forget even how she wound up on the outside not doing anything. But Shayna just kicked ass for like the final minute of that match. There was a great false finish in there too, where I think, yeah, Sasha hit the frog splash on Nia, and Shayna went to break it up, but Bayley intercepted her with a Bayley to belly. And I thought that was it. I thought, okay, well, you know, Sasha and Bayley get to stay tag champs for a while. And no, it was a good false finish. But the way it ended was Bayley was the legal person in that match. And so was Shayna, obviously. So Shayna has to get her in the curb through the clutch. And then Sasha runs in to try and stop it. So Shayna just chucks Bayley off to the side. And then like throws down Sasha and puts her in a death lock and just stands there waiting for Bayley to come at her. So she just takes her, spins around, puts her in the give her a clutch again, and then drops to her back, thereby putting the actual real death lock in on Sasha. Now Sasha could have tapped, but if she didn't, it wouldn't have mattered. She wasn't the legal person. It would have been nice to have the visual of both of them tapping at the same time, but I understand the point was that Sasha didn't tap and Bayley did, so then that drives a wedge between them even further. But the best part was that Sasha got around to being able to like try and hit Shayna in the face with her left hand, with her left arm. So Shayna just grabs it and uses it, pulling it across Bayley's throat in the Kirifuda clutch, choking out Bayley with Sasha's limb. I don't think there's anything that they could have done more with Shayna that could have tried desperately to erase the terrible booking they handed her at Mania, where she lost in like 8 minutes to a counter to the Kirifuda clutch that she's lost to three times in a high profile way. And if she definitely would have figured out how to counter that counter by now, because, you know, she's a surgeon and surgeons are smart. But since then, they had her in the Money in the Bank match. They had her off TV for a while. She beat Natalya a couple of times. It's so much nicer to watch them book her this way than they have in the past on Raw, and I'm very happy about that. Also, they continue to not be great friends, but you know, I don't know how long this tag title reign is going to last. I know Shayna needs to be a future Raw or SmackDown Women's Champion, singles wise. She should have a long run, but yeah. So the Raw Women's Championship wasn't defended. The tag team titles weren't defended, were they? Not that I know of. We had Randy Orton versus Keith Lee. And I was wrong. Pleasantly surprised. It's always nice when I'm wrong. I'm not always nice. But most of the time, it's nice because I predict the worst things. I'm a worst-case scenario type of booker. But I really thought they were going to have either Randy win, because it's weird to have Randy lose on his way to facing Drew again. It's weird to have Keith Lee lose, you know, calling him up. You know, it's the thing they normally would do. It's like, oh well, he tried valiantly, but there was a distraction finish and blah blah blah, you know. No shame in losing to the Viper. Some shit like that. So having him win convincingly. It seems to me they're not doing the Big Bang Catastrophe, his like modified, it's like a Death Valley driver into a jackhammer type of thing. Looks like me that they're not doing that for him anymore. His finisher is now the Spirit Bomb. Like a sit out last ride, like very high angle. It's a great move. It's cool that he can put it on somebody pretty much out of nowhere. He's strong enough to do whatever he wants to somebody, even a dude the size of Randy Orton. So the match was very good, back and forth. You could tell Randy was not prepared for what that felt like, and I loved Randy's sell of it. Like after the pinfall, he just lay there going like, "Ow, ow!" Like he had no idea that that would hurt so bad, and it does, apparently. So Keith Lee gets the victory over Randy Orton, and Drew McIntyre has a hairline jaw fracture, which they announced this, which is a lot better than what Charlie Caruso thought he had, which was like a skull fracture, bleeding in the brain. Probably his career is over. Maybe he's going to die. They upgraded him from maybe he's going to die to hairline jaw fracture, which is not great, but it's a damn sight better than maybe he's going to die. So that explains why Drew wasn't able to interfere in the match on Sunday. But they're still planning to have him defend his title at Clash of Champions or Night of Champions, whatever the fuck it's called now, because that is the only night in the year where all titles must be defended. We'll talk more about that in a second. And also at Payback, there was the Seth and Murphy versus Ray and Dominic match. Everyone was talking about how this was obviously the match of the night, and it probably was, but I mean, that's not really saying much, you know? Like, the overbooked main event. Keith Lee and Randy Orton was good, but not as good as the tag match. The women's tag match was pretty great. I might have actually put that over the Mysterio clan versus, you know, the Messiah and his disciple. But everyone's just talking up this thing. I'm like, you're grading this on a curve, right? Because Dominic is so new, and like, that's fine. Dominic's way ahead of where I expected him to be, mainly because, you know, he'd been training on the side, you know, like not in front of our eyes. He's not a polished TV character at all. Like his promo delivery is stilted and wooden. Remember that thing a while back where they're trying to figure out who's the real father, Rey Mysterio or Eddie Guerrero? I think the real father of Dominic is Geppetto, because he's so wooden, like Pinocchio. That's absolutely a joke they would use. It's terrible. I came up with it, but it's terrible. I'm admitting to it, but they would think it's funny and probably use it on the air. Yeah, he's not great at all the other stuff, but in the ring, like, I'm really impressed. Like he needs to work a little bit on some of his timing and waiting around for certain things to happen and the little acting beats in between moves. But like, I'm really impressed with some of the transitions he's able to do. And I'm into it, but it is a weird thing. Like I wonder how many, not PC recruits, but like NXT guys are like, oh, I get it. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, sure. Nepotism is fun. Son of Rey Mysterio. Meanwhile, I've been working on the indies for 12 years before I got signed here. I can't even get on TV. You know what I mean? Like it's, I don't know. It's a little bit. I just don't know what his standing in the locker room is. I think maybe, you know, they do the whole thing where, hey, you know, that's why we beat him to death with kendo sticks. You know, maybe that's why. So he could, you know, prove he's one of us. Some bullshit like that. But match was good. And the right guys won it. During the match, they were promoting the hell out of Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins one-on-one tomorrow night. And it was like weird because I'm like, so you're telling that, like, how long is this feud gonna go? Like, it's just weird. It's just weird. Like, it's just, there's no end to it. So that you're having a match, a tag match now, promoting the singles match that is the following night, during that match? Are you going to promote a different match that's going to happen the following week? How long is this just going to keep on going in perpetuity until Dominic feels comfortable wrestling somebody who's not Seth or Murphy? But the big thing that happened was that Seth was going to do a buckle bomb to Ray, and then and Murphy was going to like kick him in the head as he got bombed in the buckle. But instead, Ray got out of the buckle bomb with a Hurricane Rana thing and threw Seth into Buddy's foot instead. So now and then Buddy got pinned. So that little thing is going to start what I hope is Buddy Murphy leaving Seth Rollins and going on a little babyface run where he gets to do all of his amazing stuff, maybe win some matches instead of being a pinfall protection for Seth Rollins. Buddy versus Seth. I could get in some of those matches. That could be a lot of fun. Anyway, I think that's it, right? That's all that happened on the Raw side on Payback. If I think of anything else, I'll bring it up. Anyway, I mentioned that they were promoting the hell out of Ray versus Seth. Sorry, I'm just thinking about that foul call on Giannis to lose the game. No reigning MVP and probably current MVP of this season is it has a more fucked up whistle than Giannis Antetokounmpo. In the history of the NBA, no reigning MVP ever has those fucking fouls called on him. Not ever. And I don't understand. Like, are all NBA refs racist against Nigerians? I don't know. But it's pissing me off. Anyway, back to basketball. No, not basketball. Not basketball. It's a wrestling podcast. I'm sorry. The reason I brought up the Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins thing is because 50 minutes before Raw was scheduled to go on, they tweeted out, hey, there are going to be 3 singles matches tonight on Raw, and the winners of those 3 matches will go on later tonight in the main event to a triple threat match, in which the winner of that will then become number one contender to Drew McIntyre for Clash Night of Champions. For Clight of Champions. Nash of Champions. And one of the three matches are Keith Lee versus Dolph Ziggler, because Dolph Ziggler gets things that he doesn't deserve. Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens with a distraction / interference / attack before the match development that we could all see coming because of Aleister Black and Kevin Owens thing. And Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins was initially one of the 3 matches that was going to determine the 3 guys for the triple threat, which is it. So they just, this regular singles match that didn't have anything attached to it, that was promoted days in advance, Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio, all of a sudden now has this huge thing attached to it. Rey and Seth, the first spot in that triple threat, that had been really interesting. And then, like, right before they went on the air, whoops, Rey Mysterio has a torn triceps, they say. I don't know. It could be real. I don't know. This company lies about everything, so you'll forgive my skepticism. But he's got a triceps tear from the match, apparently, at Payback. So he can't wrestle Seth Rollins for a spot to see who's in the triple threat, to see who's going to be number one contender. So who are we going to replace him with? Bobby Lashley, the United States champion? No. Do we have anybody else on the roster who Apollo Crews? He was just U.S. title, U.S. contender, U.S. title, U.S. champion, excuse me, United States champion for a couple of months. And I know he just lost his title, but, you know, it's not unheard of for a guy to be the mid-card champion for a while, lose that title, and then move up to see maybe he's championship material, like real championship material. Apollo Crews might get that shot. No, Dominic Mysterio gets that shot. Now, at that point, you know Seth Rollins is winning this match because it's ludicrous to put Dominic Mysterio into a triple threat match to see who wins, who becomes the number one contender. I mean, it just is. Like, as far as I know, he hasn't wrestled anybody besides Murphy or Seth Rollins. Like, he hasn't wrestled anybody else. He might not have what it takes to be like, oh, hey, we're going to call this triple threat on the fly. And he's like, sure, guys, whatever. Okay. When do I do the 619? He does the things that he does really well. I do wonder how versed he is in the things that he doesn't do. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous to put him in there, but they did. So the night on Raw starts with Randy Orton walking out and saying, whatever. Just he gets to talk about how he punts people in the head and how he shouldn't have to win a match to win a triple threat to become number one contender. He should be given it. He should be handed to him, which would make a lot, would carry a lot more weight if he hadn't just lost the night before clean to another guy who's in this group of six. So Keith Lee comes out to pick a bone with him after, of course, Randy Orton shows off his wicked Photoshop skills, which had put Edge, Christian, Big Show, Ric Flair, and Drew McIntyre, and Shawn Michaels all together in hospital beds because of how he punted them in the head. And then Keith Lee interrupts it. Keith Lee looks a lot better now. He's wearing the bicycle shorts. He's not wearing the thing. But by the way, that was better. They're still having him wear the fucking like fat guy going swimming shirt. Which I don't think you need. I mean, we can tell he's big. You're not hiding how fat he is with that shirt, Vince. But at least he's not wearing the skirt anymore. Anyway, so he comes out, but the music still sucks. I guess they're working on that. And he gives a really good promo about how he already beat Orton and blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. It's a promo, but he does it well. And then he's sneak attacked by Ziggler, and Orton leaves, and he fights more with Ziggler, and we go to break. We come back, and Ziggler versus Lee. Ziggler sells all over the place for Lee, but still gets in way too much offense. Lee should have just beaten him in like 4 minutes. I mean, I know you try and sell us on Dolph Ziggler, former champion and everything, but really, he hasn't been shit in a long time. But anyway, Ziggler gets a zigzag on him, he kicks out, and Ziggler's going to go for a super kick, but Lee blocks it and puts him right up in the spirit bomb, 1, 2, 3, done. There you go. Good. Backstage, this is good for Keith Lee. They're booking him right. The matches he has versus guys like Dolph Ziggler should be over quicker. That's my thing. Like, if you're going to push him to the moon, like they say Vince wants to do, okay, if you're going to push him to the moon, like figure out something better than create a wrestler number 11 for his theme. Like, it's bad. They ask, talking to Jackson Baszler, who argue while being interviewed about who is the one who actually is more responsible for winning, which is weird because Baszler obviously is, but Nia Jax is stupid. Asuka steps to them. Baszler, you know, this is our interview. You can't just interrupt us. So Asuka shoves Baszler away, and Jack steps in front. So like Jax is like the big sister protecting her little sister, which is definitely not how I think Baszler should have like pushed Nia Jax aside and said, I don't need you sticking up for me. I want this one-on-one match with Asuka anyway. So they, Asuka leaves. Baszler walks up. Blah, blah, blah. Adam Pearce, old Scrap Daddy on Twitter. Scrap Daddy. He is yelling at security guards about, you will protect this house. You're not going to let anybody in here, because if you do, we can find somebody who will stop people. You're not the group who calls themselves Retribution is going to come here, and you're going to stop them, aren't you guys? You better stop them. And I want them to be like, hey, man, I work for a temp agency, and they sent me here. I get like $11 an hour. I don't need you yelling in my face. Like, regular security guys who, like, work arena details are just dudes from a security agency. Like, they get sent to... I used to, like, work at theaters and stuff, like, where they would have, like, you know, music acts come through, and the security guys are just people who, like, signed up to do this detail, and they get paid dick. Like, it's not like they're part of an elite security. They're not. These guys are not former, you know, Army Rangers. This is not like the Green Berets you're yelling at, Adam Pearce. It's weird. We will find somebody who can do your jobs. If you cannot do your jobs, will you do your jobs? Yes, sir. No, come on. Just like, I want one guy to be like, yeah, I guess. Like, I need this job. Please don't fire me, but I have no combat training. Like, I got laid off from my job, and I just need this to pay the bills. I got a car payment, so. But yeah, please don't yell at me, though. We introduce Asuka. Asuka wants a new challenger. Who's deserving, says Charlie Caruso. She names people that she's beaten. And then Mickey James comes out. And the thing about Mickey James and Asuka is that Mickey returned to WWE by having a match versus Asuka at whatever the hell, TakeOver Toronto. So years ago, 2016. She's been out for a long time and she's back and she wants a title shot, which I think is probably what they're going to wind up doing at Night of Champions, Clyde of Champions, Clash of Nash of Champions. But Lana and Natalya come out and they have a problem with it, which, I mean, I can't disagree with them. They say, you think you can be out forever and just show up and jump to the front of the line? Why do you get a title shot? And I have to agree with them. But, you know, Lana says things. Whenever Lana says things, it's bad. And Natalya is trying to imitate Lana, so she's bad. Yeah, so they attack. Lana and Natalya attack Mickey and Asuka. Anyway, so this is they go to commercial. It's so funny. They go to commercial with this brawl that's happening between these four women, and they go to commercial and they come back and they do the Condor's Cure spot, which is, you know, inspirational. I'm not gonna say it's not. And then they go like, hey, by the way, this is what happened with the Hurt Business last week. They have a whole thing, right? And then again, I need somebody to tell me, what is the plan with Demi Burnett? What is the plan? What's the deal? What are we doing? Are you putting her on TV like getting us used to her so that when she becomes the new Renee Young, basically, that we're all like, we're okay with it because she seems to like, she likes wrestling. Like, she's vacuous. You can tell behind her eyes, there's nothing there. She's an empty vessel. It's just a hollow skull. There's no brain in there. She's terrible. Like, I don't know, but, Cedric Alexander is talking to the Viking Raiders because of the thing that happened with the Hurt Business last week. So now they got a six-man tag. She's there's like I'm really impressed, Cedric Alexander, that you will turn down the Hurt Business no matter what. I support all three of you, but especially you, Ivar. I'm gonna kiss you on the cheek now. Mwah. Okay, let's all walk away. And then Angel Garza is like, he walks up with a rose. Like, he. I mean, you're fucking married, dude. I fucking hate all of this. This is just the worst. It's just the worst. So, all of that, and then we finally get to the match that brawl that happened like 12 minutes ago set up. Lana versus Mickey James with Asuka on commentary, except they can't get her mic to work, so that's fun. Lana and Mickey James is over like that. It's over. Like, it's just Lana tries to work her over a little bit, but Mickey James hits a Mick kick and that's it. It's over. I mean, whatever. We see film of what happened with Aleister Black, Kevin Owens last week, where he faked an eye injury re-aggravation, I guess. Charlie Caruso is backstage and wants to talk to Aleister Black, but guess who walks out of Aleister Black's dressing room? It's Randy Orton. I wonder what he could be talking to him about. Anyway, back to commercial. So this is a weird thing they mentioned it's the Iconics versus Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott. Now, they had their match on the pre-show. Pre-show, I didn't watch it. But I guess Ruby and Liv won. Is there something specifically come out of that match that called for this Monday match to happen? Like, I don't know. But all of a sudden, it's Ruby and Liv, the Riott Squad. They should really change their name to Live to Riott. Cause that was an amazing, they have these awesome, jackets. And, I think it's Ruby says Riott to the numeral two, Live, L-I-V. And then Liv says Live to Riott. And I think that's badass. I think it's really cool. I think the slogan's great. I think they should call themselves Live to Riott. Or Riott to Live, whatever you want to call them. The Riott Squad implies that they're not equal anymore. You know, they are equal now. There was a Riott Squad because Ruby was definitely the leader and Liv and Sarah Logan were followers, but now they're equals, so you should change the name to something that signifies that. Anyway, it's them versus the Iconics. And the winners become the tag team number one contenders to the women, to Shayna and Nia. The losers have to disband as a team forever, which is unnecessary. You already don't have enough tag teams. You broke up Bliss Cross Applesauce. You broke them up so that Alexa Bliss could have a nervous breakdown and fall in love with the demon clown. You're breaking up Sasha and Bayley. You just threw together Nia and Shayna out of the blue. Why would you break up the Iconics? You don't have other people. What are you doing? I don't know, man. It's weird. I mean, Fire and Desire used to be a tag team. That's long gone. Why are we breaking up teams? Why are we forcing them to break up? I know the real answer is that apparently Vince is enamored with Peyton Royce and thinks that she's got a great singles career ahead of her, which, I mean, got to make Billy Kay be like, what am I, chopped liver? I don't know how to do an Australian accent really well. Do they have chopped liver in Australia? What am I, Vegemite? Vegemite, mate. Vegemite. It's weird. Why would you break them up? They're great. Both teams now you have a reunited Riot Squad, and the Iconics are great together. Why would you break them up? It's stupid and short-sighted. But they interview Billy and Peyton, and they talk about how they've been together forever, and they have like a picture of them when they were in high school or whatever, and they decided to leave their families behind in Australia and come to WWE together as a package deal, and they've been together ever since, and they've been the rock for each other this whole time. And to have all of that be said on the same night that you're going to break them up forever, because, I mean, we'll talk about this later, because Billy Kay lost a roll-up battle with Ruby Riot, it seems like a dumb thing to do. Anyway, we'll talk more about that when it happens. Hey, Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens. So Randy Orton comes out first, then Kevin Owens. By the time he gets down to the bottom of the ramp, here comes Aleister Black to attack him, hit him with a black mask, and then he goes away. So Kevin staggers into the ring, and the ref's like, hey, I don't think I should start this match. I think we're going to have to – you have to forfeit. And Kevin's like, no, I want to fight. I have to fight. Fight, Owens, fight. And so he gets finally staggers to his feet, makes the ref call for the bell, and then he attacks Randy Orton while being barely able to stand. And he chops Randy Orton a few times, get a few good punches, and then Randy says, okay, enough of this shit, hits an RKO for the win. And that's it. And, I mean, this is good. We're going to get Aleister versus Kevin Owens out of this. Randy Orton moves on like we thought he would. Fine. We got a whole Mysterio family with him. The daughter's even there. Family. That's the whole fucking... But, oh, Dominic. I know they're going to write your promos for you. You got to make them sound more off the cuff, man. The line they gave him to say is bad enough, but the way that he says it. Tonight, I've got a 619 with the name Monday Night Messiah written all over it. You wrote Monday Night Messiah on a move? Like, the turn of phrase you're echoing is, I got a bullet with your name on it. Which I guess is still hyperbole or, you know, using metaphor. You know what I mean? Nobody actually writes a name on a bullet. Because how would you... I guess maybe you could though. You could take a pen and you could write somebody's name on a bullet, and you could put that bullet in your gun, and you could shoot that bullet at somebody. You can't write a name on a 619, and especially that this is a terrible cliche, but having the poor kid be like, I've got a 619 with the name Monday Night Messiah written all over it. Oh my God, it was so bad. Poor kid. Like, just like somebody teach him how to talk. Like he's getting much better in the ring. I can already tell he's gonna get better and better and better. He's gonna be great in the ring. They're gonna put a damn belt on him before he knows how to string three words together in front of a camera. Oof. MVP does the VIP lounge. Bobby Lashley is out there. They talk about beating up Cruz. They talk about Cedric Alexander. Lashley and Benjamin want to attack him, but MVP apparently thinks Cedric Alexander is going to join the Hurt Business, which at this point is 50-50 or not. I don't know if that's actually going to wind up happening. But MVP's, you came out here all alone. Does that mean you want to join? And Cedric's like, hell no, I'm not going to do it. But I didn't come out here alone. And the Viking Raiders sneak attack him. The Viking Raiders are just like, just if you're a black dude who needs some backup, the Viking Raiders are there for you. The Viking Raiders are down with the culture, and I think that's great for them. But also, they're Hanson and Rowe. They're Hanson and Rowe, man. They're two of the greatest fucking tag team wrestlers in the world. And you made one guy into like a comedy ladies man. He's fat and has a beard and the ladies love him is a joke that you're prepared to run into the fucking ground. If you haven't already. Anyway, so there's a brawl. We get the actual six man tag. Now, six man tag is a six man tag. I'm not gonna fucking go into it. It's a fucking thing. It's a WWE produced six man tag. It is what it is. There's a brawl with the Viking Raiders and Shelton and Lashley on the outside, which allows a Cedric to counter MVP and roll him up for a pinfall. MVP holds off Lashley and Shelton again, who they want to beat up Cedric. And so later, they do. You know, it's just the way it's a weird deal. Titus O'Neil is going to be in Raw Underground. Get ready for that. So I don't know what the fuck happened to Viking Raiders, but it's really quick from the time that Cedric and the Viking Raiders leave to go celebrate their victory to a couple of like minutes later, you see the Hurt Business just wailing away on Cedric Alexander, who's all by his lonesome backstage, and Ricochet and Apollo Crews have to run up and they have to stop them. I don't know what happened to Eric and Ivar. Did they hit the showers? The Hurt Business talks some trash and then they leave. By the way, you know what a dream match of mine was? I say was. For years now. Mustafa Ali versus Ricochet. And this time, right now, actually, I think tomorrow, I get to watch that match. Because they taped it for Main Event. Ricochet versus Mustafa Ali on Main Event. Ricochet and Mustafa Ali, who were tag teaming together as recently as I think 2 weeks ago, are fighting each other on Main Event in a match that they will never let them do all the stuff they could do. I mean, can you imagine like those two guys with something on the line, 15 minutes, let them go all out? Like, how fucking gorgeous that would be. And they're putting it on Main Event. Spoiler alert, Ricochet wins because of course. So it's Iconics versus the Riot Squad. The Iconics get to look good before they lose. But yeah, Liv and Peyton do not figure at all into the final, into the end of the match. It is a roll up battle between Ruby Riott and Billy Kay trying to roll each other up in weird positions, and Riott wins. And then the Iconics are very upset and they scream about it. They're very, very upset. As they should be. They should not break them up. It's bad. It's a bad thing to do. Dominic versus Seth Rollins is a long match. Dominic looks really good against Seth Rollins. I think I heard that he was training at Seth's gym. Like that's where he's been doing all of his training. So I'm assuming these guys have been working together in Seth's gym a lot in preparation for this feud. And it shows. These two guys work really, really well together. Good for Seth Rollins for showing the kid the ropes and making him look really great. Dominic tries to do a frog splash, but Rollins rolls out of the way, and Rollins gets up and hits the stomp, and that's it. So it's Seth is in the triple threat. So it's going to be Seth versus Keith Lee versus Randy Orton. And no, the Keith Lee is buried thing. He's not buried. They're not burying him. They're using him right now. We'll see what they do with him in 6 months or a year. They might get tired of him, or they might actually continue to use him, have him as a face of the brand. He's got something going for him, which is that he's incredibly charismatic and he's very large. So those are things that people really, really like about him. So yes, Keith Lee versus Randy Orton and Seth Rollins in a tag team title, in a triple threat match to see who is the number one contender to the WWE Championship. That is not where I saw Keith Lee being a week after he gets called up, because they booked him like absolute dog shit in his final NXT match. So, and that's silly me that I would think there'd be any shred of continuity from NXT to the main roster. Like, why would I think that? I shouldn't think that. But they made him look so terrible in his final match in NXT that it didn't make sense to me that he would be pushed so hard in his first week on the main roster. Silly me. But anyway, Rollins hits another stomp to Dominic after the match. Anyway. So Raw Underground starts. Titus O'Neil's in the ring, beats up some enhancement talent. And then it's he beats another guy up, throws him down. And then who else wants a piece of Titus? So Riddick Moss steps up, and Riddick Moss they are pushing as something. I guess like a Raw Underground champion, if that's ever going to be a thing. Like Riddick Moss, again, a dude with no real fighting experience. He's not some MMA badass. He's just a big dude who played football once, which is really what Titus O'Neil is. He's a bigger dude that played football once. But Titus looks like he's beaten the hell out of Riddick Moss for a long time, and then Titus get back into the ring. It's weird to call it a ring, up on the platform. After Titus throws him out in the ring and throws him up against the shelf for whatever, Titus looks like a badass. And then Riddick Moss apparently has loaded, like he's got brass knuckles or something, because he punches Titus once and he just drops. I don't buy it. The Trade Profits are doing some terrible skit backstage. I don't know. I don't know. I would hope they would get to write some of their own material. But then again, I hope it's not, because I hope they didn't come up with this shit. Like, they make fun of Zelina Vega because she's too short to ride roller coasters. You know, you must be this tall to ride this ride. They think that she's too short to do. Like, what does that matter? I want to be clear here. Zelina Vega poisoned Montez Ford. That's the story right now. They did a weird thing where, like, the camera angle of her poisoning him was legit. It was intentionally. The camera angle was intentionally obscured. It was from behind her, so you could tell she was doing something in the vicinity of his drink, but you couldn't see exactly what. Then he was poisoned, and she did it stupidly in a match before a match that meant nothing, as opposed to doing it before the match they had at SummerSlam, which would have affected them and would have allowed, you know, her team to win. So she did it there. They keep mentioning it, but they've basically forgotten about it. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, I guess it was to allow Bianca Belair to get revenge against Zelina Vega on behalf of her husband. But then Bianca Belair wasn't on this episode of Raw. So what's that? Like, you can't have part of this feud. Like, is part of this feud is the manager of one team tried to poison a member of the other team. That can't be just like part of the feud. It has to be a major, major fucking turning point in something. Like, it's not just like, oh, by the way, yeah, that happened. Like, no, that's got to be a thing. Why isn't that a big deal? What did she poison him with? Was it like if she put enough in there, would it have killed him? This is the same shit that happened in fucking on fucking SmackDown, where Sheamus committed assault to then steal a car, to then do attempted vehicular manslaughter, to then frame another guy, the guy he assaulted, for the attempted vehicular manslaughter. And Sheamus hasn't done any time for it. What? He hasn't been arrested? Like, apparently, the story that we were told on the air was that all the eyewitnesses said it was Sheamus. So nothing? So also, Zelina Vega poisoned a guy. We've all just basically said, yes, it was Zelina Vega. She poisoned Montez Ford, and nothing. But again, you don't even call the cops when a bunch of fucking dudes in hoodies come in and assault your audience and the people who work for you. Ridiculous. Terrible skit. Listen, just get rid of the 24/7 championship. Just get rid of it. It's bad. There's nothing good about it. Nothing. Tozawa shows up, talks to a security guard. Security guard says he's not allowed in because he's not on the list. Security guard is actually a ref wearing a security guard windbreaker over it. By the time Tozawa realizes this, it's too late. R-Truth sneaks up and rolls him up. I guess the thing we're supposed to find funny is that Tozawa drives a minivan full of ninjas to the ring. That's it. That's the whole thing. That's the whole fucking thing. R-Truth runs away after getting the title for the 39th time. My God. Tozawa runs away. Tozawa gets in the van to drive after him, but one of the ninjas is left behind. He looks very forlorn. Tornado tag team match. Profits versus Andrade Angel Garza. Listen, guys, I didn't watch the match because I knew that the ending was what it was. And so the match didn't matter. It didn't matter. It was a non-title match. So there was no stakes. It didn't matter who won for bragging rights, I guess. Fuck that. That's stupid. So you know how people were like, this retribution thing, it's got no legs. It's not going to work. Vince is going to get tired of it. They're not going to have any ideas for it. They're not going to really want to go through with revealing who the leader is or who the members are, because they're going to go back and forth about who really is the leader, who's not the leader. Basically, it's going to wind up being it's going to be this all over again. Somebody pulls the hood off of the person who's the leader, and it's going to be Vince. It's me. It was me all along. Because the last time they had one of these things where who's the person who's behind it? Who? Maybe not the last time. I'm sure they've done this angle many times since then. But the most famous time, it just wound up being Vince because they couldn't figure out who they wanted it to be otherwise. And it made no sense for it to be Vince. But it doesn't fucking matter. Shut up. Take it. Just take what we say, which we give you. You'll like it. Whatever. Here's why I say they've already given up on the angle, because it wasn't used at SummerSlam, and it wasn't used on SmackDown. No SummerSlam? It wasn't used SummerSlam, was it? No SummerSlam, no SmackDown, no Payback. Now it's finally being used again. The whole thing, this match and the attack by Retribution that ends the match, they're not, for those of you who don't know, Hulu edits down Raw from 3 hours to 90 minutes. It's a real tight 90 minutes. It's always good. Because 3 hours, if you take out the commercials, is really like 2 hours and 10 minutes. So they just take out about 40 minutes worth of programming, and they give you 90 minutes of the important stuff. Anything else is on YouTube if you want to watch it. Now, me, because I do this podcast, I DVR it as well. But I always watch the 90 minutes first because I want to know what WWE thinks is, because you know they're in charge of what goes on the Hulu 90-minute version. Hulu's not in charge of that shit. WWE's in charge of that shit. So you want to know what they think is important. What is the stuff they think they can leave on the cutting room floor that doesn't need to be in there? So I always watch that first. And then I figure out what I missed, and I go and I fast forward through the DVR stuff to get and see what I missed. The Retribution stuff wasn't on the edited version of Hulu. They cut it out. They cut out Mickey James and Lana and the Mickey and Asuka thing. They cut that out. And they cut out the 24/7 thing. And they cut out this match and the attack by Retribution. There was no mention of Retribution, nothing. So it's not an important storyline anymore. Just not. And we get Retribution attacking. Well, the lights flicker, and Angel Garza, who has brought fucking Demi Burnett down to the goddamn ringside, goes in, runs out of the ring, gets her, and they run out into the crowd. Crowd, where the crowd would be. And then Retribution attacks, and they beat up everybody. They beat up Zelina Vega, who fights back valiantly. They beat up Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins and Andrade. They beat them all up. And then they run away. And Adam Pearce is pissed at the security guards. But the big deal, I guess, is that Angel Garza just abandoned Andrade and took Demi Burnett. Later, we see Angel Garza and Demi Burnett wandering through the back together. And Demi's like, I don't know. You, why? Retribution. But didn't you just abandon everybody? And Angel Garza, I didn't abandon anybody. Look, I could never live with myself if anything happened to you. And she's like, oh, okay. I love you because you said nice things about me. Yay. I could never, if anything, I will never abandon you. If anything happens to me, I couldn't take it. Then Retribution comes in through a door in front of them, and Angel Garza just runs away like he's fucking Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. And Demi Burnett gets to stand there for a while, and then she turns around and kind of like jogs away in her little heeled boots. Retribution follows them. And what I want to know is Demi Burnett dead? Please tell me she's dead. Please tell me the female members of Retribution beat her to death with baseball bats. And I never have to see her again. That would be a little early birthday present for me. Please. The Bucks are down 2-0. And I hate everything and everyone. Please, WWE, just give me this one thing. Please tell me Demi Burnett is dead. Please. But the thing we have to talk about the most is the attack that happened in the ring by Retribution, and how Kevin Dunn, who is the director, the head producer of WWE, he's in charge of what goes on the television and has been forever. by all accounts, a horrible little man, just an awful human being of a person. But he's the guy who is in charge of camera cut, camera cut, camera cut, zoom, 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 zoom. Let's show here, what here. Hey, there's actually a film of this one attack by a guy hitting somebody with a chair. And they actually, you can actually see the guy behind the camera. And the camera guy is actually, he's cameraing like this. And with every chair shot, he does this. Which is absolutely how you would not cameraman a thing like that. You would just make sure you had enough wide enough angle that you could actually see the whole thing happening. You wouldn't do that. That's stupid. But he's the one who decides that happens. And I'm telling you, he needs to be stopped. It is impossible to watch so much shit that happens on WWE television because of Kevin Dunn. I'm done with Kevin Dunn. I can't watch it anymore. Any of these things were like, it's supposed to be chaotic, so shake the camera a lot. Zoom in and out. Camera cut to all things, so we only see one camera like once. Plus, he's cutting away and two things so often that we miss everything. There's one thing where like the female members of Retribution are gathered around Zelina Vega, intimidating her. And she's like, fuck it, and throws the first punch. And she throws a punch at another one of them, and they eventually overwhelm her very quickly. But the camera cuts away right as she cocks back for the first punch, so we never see it. That's showing a replay and can keep it on one angle for all of 5 seconds. That's all it would take is 5 seconds. To capture her throwing the first punch like a badass. But instead, we cut away and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, so we don't actually see anything. Earlier in the night, when Aleister Black hit Kevin Owens with a black mass, the camera angle they chose to show during the black mass was behind Aleister Black. And so close to him, you didn't even see it happen. You didn't see the foot connect to Kevin Owens at all. That's just shitty direction. That's terrible. Nope. Kevin Dunn has been doing this shit for what? I don't know. Was it 20 years? Is it longer than that? 25 years? 30 years? I don't know how long he's been doing this shit. But it's a long fucking time. No other television company or production would ever hire this man because there is no evidence that he knows how to actually direct a fucking show because he's doing this shit all the time. There's another moment in the main event we're going to get to that was so fucking egregious. I don't know how that's foul. How is that a foul? Granted, the foul before, the one on the Heat that gave Middleton 3 free throws to tie the game, that was also a bad call. But the call after that on Giannis, how is that a fucking foul? I'm sorry, I've calmed down. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. So, back to Raw Underground. This is the best Raw Underground segment they've ever done. I'm here to say it. Jessamyn Duke, one of the four other horsewomen, she of the backup to Shayna Baszler in NXT a while ago. She's fighting some girl. She looks like she's at a punk rock concert. She's got like a flannel tied around her waist, right? She's just beating the fucking piss out of some girl. With strikes, just beating the fucking piss out of her. And after the match is over, after they've called it, after she mounts this girl and just rains down elbows on her face, after that, while she's writhing around in agony on the little platform, she runs in and does a sliding knee to knee her off onto the ground. And some other girl gets up and she takes umbrage with this. She takes exception. And Jessamyn Duke kind of backs away like, whatever. And then Marina Shafir, who's Jessamyn Duke's best friend, and also has worked with Shayna Baszler in the past. She gets up and she stands up and she gets in this woman's face, the one who gets them to who has taken exception. And Marina Shafir is wearing like a, I don't know, like a safari hat. I don't know what the fuck it is. It's got a little string around it, around the neck, and it just kind of falls back behind her. I don't know what you call that thing. Like a bucket hat? I don't know what it is. It's like something you would wear out when you were walking around, like going to see nature or something. Not only that, she's wearing an ankle-length skirt. She's like, yeah, let's have a fucking match. She's not even dressed. There's no way she's dressed to compete. Not at all. And she drops this bitch. Just beats the hell out of her. And she's, meanwhile, watching all of this are the Iconics, who were really upset. Because they're not allowed to be friends anymore. But Shane McMahon, who's got a great bedside manner, is like, that's fine. It's Raw Underground. Come on. Walk it off. It's fine. Get over it. So after Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir have demolished these women, I don't know what Billie Kay thought was happening. Like if she and Peyton were going to get in there together, but Peyton just kind of shoves her up on there by herself. And Billie's like, what are you, I don't want to be in here. What are you doing? And Peyton's like, no, you're good. You'll be fine. So Billie, stands up and is really afraid of these two women. So, she Jessamyn Duke makes a motion at her and she flinches and turns around and sees Marina Shafir, who makes a move at her, and she flinches and turns around directly into a roundhouse kick to the head. And she goes down. The way she falls, it's so funny, because you could she gets kicked and her it, like her head cocks like a dog, like just goes like, did I just get kicked? I did get kicked. And she's able to like fall in sections. Like her torso falls somehow first, then she falls to a knee, and then she falls to her hip, and then she slides in. Like she gets knocked out 5 different times in the same cell job. Billie Kay might be the greatest comedy seller of all time. Like pure comedy seller. I had somebody say, well, Kurt Hennig says hello. Listen. Kurt Hennig was a great comedy seller. Kurt Hennig was also a great fucking wrestler, which I don't think anybody would say about Billie Kay. I think she's underrated as a wrestler, but the thing that she does, the thing that she does is comedy sell. Kurt Hennig could comedy sell when you asked him to. He could also be a motherfucking badass who beat anybody up in the ring with, like, you asked him to do that too. So I'm talking about just a pure comedy seller that doesn't do anything else. She's it, man. That's, oh God, it was fucking great. But then Shane McMahon is all creepy and puts an arm around Peyton Royce. Is like, yeah, hey, great, more Raw Underground later. Cedric, Ricochet, and Apollo Crews are talking each other up. Shirley Caruso talks to them. Blah blah blah. They all go in. They're gonna go into the fucking. They're gonna go into the Raw Underground. More Raw Underground. Shelton Benjamin versus Apollo Crews. Shelton at one point shoves Crews off the platform onto the floor. There's a brawl. Eventually, Cedric Alexander, Ricochet, and Apollo Crews are all left laying, and the Hurt Business gets to stand tall. I already mentioned this thing about Angel Garza and Demi Burnett, and now we're here at the main event. The main event is very good. It's a very good triple threat match. I love Orton. Oh, I love, like, the match starts and Orton and Rollins immediately square off with Keith Lee, and then Orton dips out. And Rollins is like, hey, wait, we've talked about this. The two of us are going to fight him together. And Orton's like, no, you're good. You can do it all by yourself. You're a big boy. Besides, I already worked tonight. And, like, he worked for, like, 20 seconds. I think Orton's great. this is a really, really good, good match. I can't remember exactly when it happens. This is the thing I'm going to talk about with Kevin Dunn. If you watch NXT a couple of times, at least twice, in triple threat matches that Orton has been a part of, Keith Lee's been a part of, he winds up on the floor as the other guys are going at it. And the most famous one is Finn Balor standing in the corner on the turnbuckles, ready to do his like running drop kick into the turnbuckles before he does his coup de grace. And he's standing there and he's doing his little bullet club fingers that he does. And the angle is super tight on Finn Balor, right? And it is so for 10 seconds as Finn Balor gets himself psyched up for this thing. And the angle's so tight that all you can see is basically Finn Balor, like this, right? And he's looking this way. And so you can see behind him. And behind him in this angle comes up Keith Lee's face, just looking at Balor. And Balor realized somebody's there and looks at him, and he's super freaked out that Keith Lee is there, right? They've done that shot, that spot, in that shot that way, twice that I remember in in NXT. Both times shot that way. Both times got a huge pop out of the crowd because it was done with an actual crowd. And both times were great. It was an amazing moment. They did that exact same spot with Seth Rollins in the corner in the Balor position. They did the exact same spot with Keith Lee getting up right there, right? And you can tell nobody fucking told Kevin Dunn about this. Because he's got an angle that he's shooting from the beginning way back where you see almost all of the ring. So you can see Keith Lee climb up and kind of hunch down on the apron, right? Like he's unnaturally waiting for something before he pops up. Then the other angle they have is a medium shot from across the ring. So you can see hunched over Keith Lee stand up very slowly right next to Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins looks over and is freaked out by Keith Lee standing there. But from the angle they shot the second shot, there's no way Seth Rollins doesn't realize there's a giant fat man hunched over next to him on the apron, unless he's blind in his right eye. And let's be honest, also his left eye too. Lee and Rollins had worked out the spot to do it that way, the way they had done, assuming it was going to be shot that way by the director of Raw, because the director of Raw surely knows what the fuck they're doing and isn't a fucking idiot. But it's Kevin Dunn. I retweeted the angle. It is horrible. It makes Keith Lee look weird. Why are you just hanging out on the apron for a few seconds? And it makes Seth Rollins look like a complete fucking dumbass. To suspend our disbelief, we require that tight one-shot angle of Seth Rollins in the corner. Everything else, if you don't have that shot, it all crumbles, man. Kevin Dunn. Retire, bitch. You fucked up too many times, man. There's so many times I recall watching a WWE thing where they didn't even get the shot. They didn't get the shot. They didn't get the big move or the big moment in the shot. Remember? Like, here's the one everyone remembers, right? Edge returns at the Royal Rumble. The crowd's going nuts. He goes down to the ring. He takes off his jacket. He gets in, goes up the steps, and the first guy to run at him is Dolph Ziggler, and Edge spears him. But right as he's about to hit the spear, Kevin Dunn cuts to an audience member. The fuck? Like, they had to, like, because there were so many terrible cuts, terrible choices of shots to use in that moment, they were forced to release days later a alternate angles of Edge's big return at the Royal Rumble because of how bad Kevin Dunn is at his job. Oh, it's so bad. So, Orton is outside, right? There's a great, great moment where Keith Lee just chucks Seth Rollins at Randy Orton. Randy Orton winds up outside. Lee runs around the ring and pounces him, knocks him 30 feet in the air. It's great. Rollins winds up kicking him in the head and he's gonna hit the stomp. But Lee catches the stomp and hits a huge spirit bomb to Rollins, which he bounces literally out of his clutches. And he has to get up in order to go and get the pinfall on Rollins. But by that time, Orton's hit RKO on Lee, and Orton is directed to make sure he gets the pinfall on Rollins and not Lee to protect Lee, which I understand, but very awkwardly bypasses Keith Lee in order to get the pin on Rollins. Now, Orton stole a pinfall from Lee, because that was Lee's move he did to Rollins. Orton steals it. Orton looks like the heel. Lee looks like the conquering hero who next time is going to get him, we swear. He didn't actually lose the match. He got to look really strong during it. Yeah, we're all good with the Keith Lee stuff. Keith Lee looks like $1 million. Will he in 6 months? Will he in a year? Will he in 2 years? I don't know. That's the question. Right now, they're doing right by Keith Lee. I don't love the fat guy going swimming shirt that they're making him wear. But I really appreciate he's not wearing a skirt anymore, and they got to change the music to something that makes sense. But other than that, Keith Lee looks really good. The only other thing I will say is I hope Demi Burnett is dead. I really hope that. Not literally, obviously. I'm not a monster. But in kayfabe. In kayfabe, I hope her character was viciously murdered. Just with horrible blunt force trauma to the head. In kayfabe, they had to have a closed casket ceremony. It was really sad for her family. But I don't care, because I'm glad she's dead. She's dead to me. Yeah, that was Raw. And this has been Sour Graps. I have merch. It's a Sour Graps t-shirt. You could buy that at shop.fightful.com. You could do that to, you know, if you wanted to be nice and cheer me up, because the Milwaukee Bucks, the only team that I have ever really loved, is down 2-0 and will probably get swept. Or you could give it, you could buy that shirt as a birthday present to me. My birthday's at the end of this month. I'm going to be 41 years old. That sucks. 41. Mickey James is 41. I don't look as good as Mickey James. So I would say, with the exception of the way they are currently booking Keith Lee, and, you know, that's about it. Everything else pretty much sucks.